broadcasting from Melbourne, Victoria. You're listening to the Investor Exchange. Tune in each week and listen to the guys from United Global Capital discuss the topics that matter the most to your finances. Each episode will help you separate the noise from what really matters, giving you timely and actionable information you can use. We'll cover areas related to financial markets, property, politics, personal finance, and the economy. Now, here's your host, Stephanie Sumner.
Good morning, guys. Happy Friday, and happy Friday it is, because it's the end of the week and another week of lockdown gone. Louis, how are you going in isolation?
Oh, going wonderfully and swimmingly, thanks, Steph.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have actually got a bit of hay fever at the moment. Brett, have you gotten out and gone for a bit of a walk in the sunshine?
Not yet today, but yeah, did experience a little bit of it yesterday before the wind got up again. We seem to have a really windy time of it down here.
It's funny how you say an experience, and that's what it is when you do get outside, isn't it? It's a real experience.
Some light relief.
But one good thing, guys, we've got the Cox Plate and the AFL Grand Final on the same day. What are you all going to do? Joel, are you going to get drunk?
I'm surprised you even need to ask me.
Yeah.
It's about what time do you
that's
think
a given.
No.
First duty is a Saturday, isn't it?
Of course. It's going to be a super Saturday. We've got the Cox Plate and then we've got the AFL Grand Final on that Saturday night at... You know, I just hope that we can get out of our places and maybe catch up with a couple of friends and at least have a barbecue.
Might get a lead pass if Dan Andrews lets us. Huh? You never know.
Well, and even better than that would be if a sneaky chance of Collingwood making it to the big dance.
Well, that's a long bow.
Well, it is one, I don't know, but you never know.
Seen some improvement in the last week and a half in terms of our form, so I'm... And if we get a couple of good players back, you just never know.
What
right?
do you think, Louis? Spoken like two true Collingwood supporters there?
Need more data.
Are you going to let the science drive it?
You can only make judgments based on data and scientific experts.
Right. Well.
But Collingwood's got some big matches coming up. So you got a chance to beat some top four and top eight sides in the next few weeks. And that's going to determine whether you're in the eight or not. Because I don't think you've racked up enough wins yet to qualify for finals. So you got to put another one or a couple in the bank to be up there.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's a big game tonight at the Gabba. We've got Collingwood plays Brisbane tonight, and this will be the big one, I think, for Collingwood, if we can get this one.
Yeah, this will be a good indication of how we're travelling.
Mm. Now, Joel, you had something that you wanted to say about lockdown, didn't you?
Oh, look, I just wanted to, I mean, obviously yesterday and in the last few days, we've had some announcements in the news around, some potential leaks or a leak of what Victoria's lockdowns might look like after the 13th next week. Where we're expected to, well, at this stage, we're expected to come out of stage four. However, there was a leak in the news this week that we were probably likely to extend that beyond 2 weeks. That's now been debunked. Yes, I understand Andrews yesterday came out and said that was old news. I can't help but think that it was probably deliberately leaked to see what the reaction would have been if they did go ahead with a 2-week extension to the lockdown. But I'm just concerned, right? I've got to say that, you know, this week Brett and I dealt with two small business owners in a negotiation on a business transaction that we're involved in. Both of those guys are hurting severely. Just this morning I've come in to do this podcast and I go to my local, little takeout.
Kenny's.
And I was having a chat with them and they're hurting to the point that he reckons that if these lockdowns don't, if things don't improve within the next 3 months, it's doors shut for him. Having a look at the books, at least one of the people who we were dealing with, Brett, this week looks like he's going to shut his doors. I'm just really concerned that we've now been in a stage of lockdown and even with the leaking of this announcement that came out, you know, today or yesterday, that the mindset of government and the mindset of the leaders still doesn't seem to be taking into account a broad enough range of, you know, opinions and broadening their scope of who they're starting to listen to. It seems to me as though it just feels as though that the chief medical officer and his team seem to have all the ears, but it's just very, very narrow focused in terms of the focus of how we're dealing with this situation. And, you know, just this week, in the last couple of days, we have had a group of very senior medical practitioners here in Victoria write an open letter to Daniel Andrews, letting him know that not everybody in the medical fraternity actually believes that we should be extending stage four lockdowns, and in fact we should be coming out of stage four and stage three rapidly, because they have concerns over the flow-on effect this is having with the treatment of other health ailments. And so this open letter, and I'll just read a little bit of it here. I've got it here. We, the undersigned, are senior medical practitioners of various specialities who practice in Victoria and are deeply concerned with the Victorian government's management of the SARS-CoV-2-COVID-19 viral pandemic as a public health issue. The purpose of this letter is to make you aware that not all medical practitioners are in agreement with the Chief Medical Officer and the Victorian government regarding the most effective way to control this disease. We believe that an alternative medical response is required that reflects what we know about the spread of the virus, those who have died from it, and the impact that the stage three and stage four lockdown restrictions are having on physical and mental health of the general population. Now, they also go down here and say, and I quote, we know that whilst COVID-19 is highly contagious, it is of limited virulence. Virulence is essentially a technical term for severity of disease. And they go on and they quote, COVID-19 deaths are a relatively small proportion of the 114 deaths per day that are normally seen in Victoria. In comparison, since the start of March, COVID-19 has been associated with 3 of the 114 deaths per day. Now, associated means either died with the disease or died because of the disease. You know, and that compares to, you know, Victorian deaths of approximately 10,000 with cardiovascular disease and 11,000 with cancer, comparing that to the 565 Victorian patients that have died to date. So my concern is that we continue to use this sledgehammer approach when really we need to start moving now to the scalpel phase. You know, we need to start to think yep. about how can we open cafes, restaurants, bars in a safe manner. I mean, I don't know if any of you guys saw Paul DiMartino, who owns Lamaro's hotel down in South Melbourne, but he was on Sky News the other night, and he makes the point. He makes the point that you can walk into Coles or you can walk into Woolworths, put your hands all over the mushrooms and the tomatoes and the, you know, cucumbers and whatever else it is. There's no sign in with a QR code or anything like that, which was happening at the restaurants and cafes and bars prior to this. There's no restrictions on how many people can be in Coles and Woolworths. There's no, hand sanitizer is essentially optional when we've walked in there. No one is using hand sanitizer these days. Why wouldn't there be an appropriate method in which you could start to open up some of these bars, restaurants, hotels, cafes, and start to get people back to work? Because right now we've been in this lockdown for so long, you know, there's only so long that these people can, you know, go without revenue and still have to pay their outgoings and part rent and electricity and put food on the table before they run out of money.
I think maybe the outdoors, ability to at least sit outdoors might be a good one. I just worry about with pubs. I mean, how do you have a face? How do you drink with a face mask on?
No, you don't have to have a face mask necessarily. Yeah. But like what I'm saying is that, you know, there's got to be a way in which we start to think about social distancing, certain protocols, just so that money can start to ring through the registers again.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I just think that they've got to find the right solution for it. I mean, no one wants to see it take off again either. So
no one wants to see it take off again. I understand that, but at the end of the day, we now have been living with this virus now for 6 months or more, and these medical practitioners, very senior medical practitioners across a whole range of different disciplines, are suggesting that this is not the serious health crisis that we're currently treating it as. There needs to be a way in which we can start to be a little bit more nimble and open-minded to how we start to live with this virus. And I think, you know, for all intents and purposes, the feedback that I feel that we're getting from the government is that they're going for an eradication approach, not a containment approach.
That'll never happen.
And with the leaking of this and these announcements, or the leaking of this roadmap to recovery, it's an insight into at least what they were thinking. Whether or not that is actually what ends up happening on Sunday when they come out with this, it's an insight into the mindset of what leadership is currently thinking right now. And
I've got no doubt that it's a very clever group of people, a group of medical practitioners who have put that together. But I've heard that argument before, and it's a false argument when you compare the number of past deaths and use that as a guide for future actions, because that's not how you can plan a pandemic response. Just because X number of people have died in the past, you got to look at the future actions and then use statistical modeling of what number of infections would happen and use that as your prediction of future deaths.
And Louis, I agree with you, but the problem is the modeling has been grossly inaccurate. It's been bullshit. Like, seriously, we're expecting, somewhere around 10,000 deaths, 15,000 deaths, 20,000 deaths under some of the modeling. And that was probably just in Victoria, from what I recall. Possibly even as much as 100,000 deaths in Australia if everything sort of went out. We've got nowhere near that.
Well, what you're talking about when you're talking about modelling is something which is called Monte Carlo simulations. And what that does is it's a way of creating models based on you put together your variables, but you also put together your unknown factors and arrange for what those potential unknown factors are. And then you put it, you run a scenario with the computer through that set of variables and an unknown random factor. And then you run it again and your random factor creates a slightly different scenario. And then you run it again and you get a third slightly different scenario. And with Monte Carlo simulation, you actually run it maybe 5,000, 10,000, 20,000 times through a computer. And that's where you get a range of outcomes. That was what was famously used by the forecasters at, is it 538, the political pollsters in the USA, when they predicted that Donald Trump only had a one-third probability of winning the election. That was based on Monte Carlo simulations.
So why are we giving it any credence then if they got that?
Because the purpose is not to get it right. The purpose is to give it a probability weighting. And what they said was, it's different to saying a third of the population is going to vote for Donald Trump. That's not what they were saying. What they were saying was, when we run this simulation 10,000 times, in one third of those simulations, Donald Trump wins. And one of those ended up being correct. So that's what the statistical modeling is. And same thing with this pandemic responses, would have been a certain number of scenarios out of 10,000 simulations where we do have 10,000 deaths based on a certain course of action. But there's also going to be simulations where we have little or no deaths based on simulations. And when the leaders are trying to plan ahead, well, how do we put these settings in place when so much is unknown about the virus and about human behavior and about so many things? How do they actually make a set of decisions and policy settings to then try and get more data and more feedback? Another one of my concerns with the scalpel approach, I see the scalpel approach and I'd love to see it work.
No, mate. I'm sorry, I disagree with you, and that's fine. Like, I mean, I'm happy that you've got your opinion, but the scalpel approach wasn't used, mate. It was used for about a week and a half, and then they shit themselves and then closed everything down. They never even gave the scalpel approach an actual chance, right? So yeah, they tried it, but we know that, you know, with all of their modelling, it took 3 weeks or 4 weeks before you started to see the effect of any of those shutdowns. And look, I guess what I'm saying here is this, right? There was a time to use the sledgehammer when we didn't know as much about it. And I'm in agreement with, you know, the first round of, you know, shutting down because we didn't know how bad it was. It was all new. we're now 6 months into this. We know a lot more about this disease than what we did and this virus before than what we did 6 months ago. And okay, we've used the sledgehammer this time around in the second wave. And we've crushed it, right? The numbers have come down and they're coming down dramatically. At some point in time, though, and I believe that time is now, we got to start thinking not just about getting, you know, eliminating this virus, but we also got to start thinking about how do we make sure that we've actually got an economy to go back to, and how do we make sure the treatment is not worse than the cure? And I reckon we're right at that tipping point right now. And I think, you know, these doctors are also saying we're right at that tipping point where if we go beyond the 13th of September, we're now risking the cure being seriously worse than the actual disease itself.
Mm. Well, yeah. It's an interesting one. And look, it's a virus where it's so polarizing even with people's decisions, isn't it? Because people have opinions, so a range of opinions. And, you know, yeah. Who knows what the right answer really is? We're not going to know. It's the first time we've ever experienced it in our entire life. So it's just one of those things. We're going to have to write it out and see where this goes. I just don't know what the answer is, you know, in all of this.
Well, I think that the answer is that we now need to start trying new things. We need to start being a little bit more open-minded to thinking a little bit more practically about how, you know, a restaurant or a cafe or a bar can start to open. You know, maybe, you know, as you walk, maybe we do keep masks on, but when you sit down at the table, you can take your mask off to have a meal and a drink.
Yeah.
Okay, but if you leave your table, you have to put the mask back on if you're passing other people in the venue. Mm. Something like that, I don't know. Maybe you've got hand sanitizer on each table.
Well, that's how it was when we were in New South Wales, when we were down at
Cronulla.
They were very, very careful about contract tracing. And I hate to say it, but I do think other states have done a better job of that. You know, and particularly Queensland when we were there, you know, people were really, really good at keeping them on track.
Admittedly, other states though haven't had the problems that Victoria's had, right? So, you know, I get there's an argument there for shutdowns. I get just try and crush it. But now that we are around 100 sort of cases a day, you know, I just know, having seen what we've seen in the last week, Brett, and having had these conversations, you know, just in the last few days with some of these small business owners, that many of them are on the verge, right? Yeah. Many of them are on the verge, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, our decision, we don't have the decision-making powers here at the moment because Daniel Andrews is the one that's going to roll out the changes.
I understand that, but that doesn't mean that you can't express a point of view and you shouldn't put that point of view forward and that you shouldn't try and influence some sort of train of thought to open people up, be that through social, through podcasts, through debate, whatever it might be.
I just wanted to ask your opinion, maybe Louis, too. Did you see that pregnant lady that was arrested for putting a post on Facebook about having a protest about COVID, peaceful protest? I think it was wearing masks, but what's your thoughts on that?
I'm surprised that we have amount of police resource, to be honest. But I guess that's probably a preemptive move. Police are, on the one hand, thinking about rules, but on the other hand, thinking of their resources anyway. And if they can send two officers around on a Tuesday morning, that's a lot less resources than having a protest get organised where they then need to provide 20 police officers. So I think they're trying to minimise their workload more than anything else. It's not a great look. At the end of the day, she was I also think it was more heavy-handed than it needed to be. I don't think she needed to be arrested.
No.
I think she just needed someone to knock on her door and say, hey, by the way, what you're suggesting is an illegal activity. We're just going to ask you to take it down. I think taking her out of the premises was unnecessary, and I think putting her in handcuffs was grossly unnecessary.
What do you think, Brett?
Similar. Yeah, it wasn't a good look. I get the reason why, the logic behind, you know, arresting her. Like, they do want to minimise, you know, any people trying to do mass gatherings or anything that they deem to be inappropriate. But yeah, it's a tough one because with a lot of this stuff, I can see both sides.
Yeah.
You can see that people are fed up and they're going to protest. I'm just not too sure what the purpose of the protest would achieve. But then again, people are getting frustrated because they feel like nothing's happening in the direction they want it.
Well, I think that comes back to Joel's point. If no one says anything about it, then we sort of sit here, you know, being silent on it and nothing changes. But, you know, it's such a tough one. I know what your opinion is, Joel, on that arrest, and you thought that was absolutely ridiculous and she should have had the right to do it. So, you know.
Well, not the right to do it, but, I mean, I was disturbed how the optics of it looked. It looked terrible.
Yeah, it did. It looked way too heavy-handed for what it was.
Yeah.
So, we can be a long way apart in opinion, but practically it might not be that far apart anyway. I've just found that with most times people come around to the same point of view with only a couple of weeks difference. The other thing I've read is that we are actually more dumb through this period of time. Being in lockdown and being under what could be considered a chronic stress situation where we are in this different environment, scientifically, it uses up our brain function. It changes our brain patterns.
Oh, I just thought it was the alcohol intake. Well, look, guys, we're going to have to take a very quick break and we'll come back to you after this message.
Want to learn the strategies that have achieved returns more than double the return of the average superannuation fund? Each day, clients of United Global Capital are using strategies and tactics that were once thought the domain of the professional investor or the super rich. Book your seat at UGC's Financial Fast Track Seminars, where you'll learn the science behind selecting high-performance stocks and real estate, how you can participate in advanced strategies like property development, short selling, and international investments, as well as how to protect your wealth against major adverse market events. To secure your seat, simply go to ugc.net.au/events and select the seminar that suits your needs. Seats are limited, so book your spot now.
Okay, welcome back, guys. Now we're going to just throw to Joel again, even though he's hogged the conversation earlier, but it's just going to be a bit of a quick update on the bad night that actually occurred on the stock market last night.
Thanks, Sarah. Look, we have sort of made a mention of this over the last couple of podcasts that particularly in the sort of stocks that we invest in and traffic in, a lot of those growth stocks that have been leading this market higher, it started to look a little bit stretched. Well, last night, the correction actually looks like it may have got underway. We had the NASDAQ down 4.96% last night, the S&P 500 down 3.5%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 2.78%. But much of the damage was in the technology-type businesses that had been the major beneficiaries of this lockdown and the acceleration in the adoption of a lot of their products and services. The stock market, in particular the NASDAQ, was looking very, very overstretched. And we actually had mentioned that we were selling into this strength very pleased that at the time of this correction last night, we were back to about 75% invested across all our portfolios. We came off margin on our CFD portfolios this week as well. Look, I would like to see that that this market still pulls back a little bit further, to be honest with you. There's still a little bit too much heat in where the NASDAQ is for my liking, and I'd be quite comfortable if we saw a 10%, maybe even a 12 or a 13% pullback here, and that would bring the NASDAQ down somewhere around the 10,500 mark on the index. If we could see that take place, I only expect it would last for 6-8 weeks at the maximum, but it would just take some of that, you know, enthusiasm and euphoria that was building up in that segment of the market. And I think it just sets us up for a better footing for medium to longer term growth down the track. I still very much believe that any correction, if it gets a little bit deeper than where it is today, is likely to be just a short-term pullback. The longer-term fundamentals still look good. It never is a good idea to bet against a recovering economy. I'd like to see a little bit of heat come out just so that we can get a little bit more stronger footing fundamentally with this market.
Yep. Good one. All right, well, we might throw over now to Brett. You've got some property stats from last month that you're going to report on.
The residential property market, the value movements are very, very flat still. Has been the case for a while. It's declining, but it's not declining at a rate that's overly concerning. So the changes in dwelling values across the country for August were a 0.4% drop across every part of Australia. So nothing significant. The drop was mostly felt in the capital cities, with Melbourne being the highest. Sydney at 0.5, Brisbane at 0.1, and believe it or not, a couple of them had positive territory, with Hobart, Darwin and Canberra all actually having increases in values over August. So not a great deal of movement. If we look at the past 12 months, the overall residential market is still up nearly 6%. So if you bought property 12 months ago, it's probably still worth more than what you paid for it, even through all these times. So not a lot of changes, pretty static. In fact, barely anything to report on.
Okay, Brett, is there any movement along, with property prices along the peninsula? Because I hear that's really gone up in the last couple of months.
Yeah, interesting. I've heard the same, Steph, that people looking for holiday homes and particularly considering sea changes has driven demand. But unfortunately, I don't have the data on that right now. Mm. I guess the only data that's in the report I'm looking at is, I guess, comparing regionals to capitals, and the peninsula would be considered regional. Yeah. Although the funny part of this, I was speaking to someone on the Mornington Peninsula recently, given that metropolitan Melbourne is in stage 4, I assumed that they were in stage 3 given they were down in Mornington, but apparently not. Apparently the restrictions and where they deem the metropolitan area goes all the way down through Red Hill, I believe.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm not too sure where they consider metropolitan ends as you head towards the Mornington Peninsula. But I guess to answer the question as best I can, Steph, the regional areas of Australia for the last month recorded virtually zero movement. So not a decline, not an increase in values. So the decline's only been in the capital. So that would suggest that, yeah, maybe there are more people heading towards regional areas, or prices are holding up because there's a little bit more demand.
Yeah, certainly interesting. I don't know whether people will use their holiday houses, though, going forward. It might be one of those things where you make this purchase and then think, it's a bit too far to get to on the weekend. So we'll just see.
We've got to be allowed to get there first.
What was that?
You need to be allowed to get there first.
That's exactly right. Aren't the fortunate ones already down there?
Yeah.
Well, look, we might take another very, very short break, and we'll come back after this message with our final topic for the day.
Are you concerned about your finances? Maybe you're not sure if you'll have enough money to retire on. Or maybe you've received a redundancy, inheritance, or even a significant promotion, or perhaps a life-changing medical diagnosis. Regardless of your concern or financial position, United Global Capital's advisors are experts in the areas of strategic financial planning, taxation, superannuation and self-managed superannuation funds, risk management, estate planning and investments. Don't let fate dictate your financial future. Take control today and contact United Global Capital for a no-cost, no-obligation financial strategy consultation. Simply call 03-8657-7640 or email info@ugc.net.au and book your appointment today.
And welcome back. Now, Louis, you're going to be speaking to us today about time or money.
I will. And which one is more important to have surplus amounts of?
Well, you could say both, but that's cheating.
I'd go with time, but only providing I've got enough money.
And for me, the answer actually depends on what you do with it. And I would go with time, but only if you're doing the right things. Along the lines of what was mentioned over the last couple of weeks, so 2 weeks ago we had a guest presenter who was more around health and wellness and having pillars to that. And for me, it depends if you are putting your time towards the things that are right for your life. So putting the right amount of time into your health, putting the right amount of time into your rest and downtime, putting the right amount of time into your work or your career or earning money, and the right amount of time into your family and that sort of thing. And what people often miss out on, and what I've talked about a lot over this podcast, if you're familiar with listening to the things that I say, is making sure that there is time in there for learning and improvement. If you use your time to continue to develop, then your effectiveness in doing those other activities is magnified. For example, if you are improving the work that you do, like if part of your job involves sales or negotiation and you use learning time to improve your skills in that area, well, then you should get a higher income in future. Or if you learn about meditation or mindfulness or something that will help your rest times, then again, you get more effective at that. So what you find is that it's not just about the amount of time that you put towards the activity, it's the quality of that activity and the results that you get from it. When it comes to money, this is a concept that can really be used by a lot of people, and it's the 80-20 principle. And the principle is well known. 80% of your results come from 20% of your time and effort that goes into it. So if you can put more time and effort into the 20%, then you should be able to see an increase in the amount of output that you get from it. And so instead of thinking of yourself as earning a flat hourly rate or flat hourly wage for the 40 hours a week that you earn, you should be thinking that for about 30 hours a week, you're probably doing stuff of less output and of less value. And there's actually about 10 hours of the week where you're doing really high value stuff. And so the principle is to focus more on those things that produce the greatest results. Now, the real message that I'm going to come to today is that a relatively small amount of time is going to have the potential to produce a very big financial result. And I bring this up at around this time of year because it's the time of year where people are receiving their annual superannuation statements in the mail. And if your superannuation statement shows a mediocre return for the last financial year, or even a negative return for the last financial year, perhaps you should be reconsidering how your superannuation is invested. And I've got a little hint for you. And it's to do with UGC and what we can achieve. Maybe Joel can help me with the sledgehammer approach. I know how much you love the sledgehammer. I'm taking credit for your work, though, in the stock market returns. How is a 17% return on average for the last 3 years, including an excellent result in the financial year for 12 months of 10% or more in our stock market returns? If you want to have an investment strategy that is shown to outperform over the medium and long term, well, then you should be contacting UGC and looking to move your superannuation fund across to us. For the amount of money that your superannuation fund will earn compared to the amount of time that you will invest in having UGC do that job of taking over your super funds, it's not a lot of time for you, not a lot of effort for you, and we will start making a lot more money for your super.
Actually, Louis, I've got the numbers here. I've just pulled them up just to make sure that we're giving our investors the correct information. Over 3 years to the 30th of June, our returns net of fees were 19.13%. Over four and a bit years to the 30th of June, 18.44% net of all fees per annum. However, when we fast forward that to the end of July, the three-year return jumps to 22.66% net of all fees, and over since inception, from the 25th of May 2016 to the 31st of July, 20.06% net of all fees per annum. So that would have meant that an account balance of $100,000 in May of 2016 would now be worth about $215,000, roughly.
Nice work. Yeah. Invested with UGC. I might not have had a choice about it, but I'm very happy with my results.
You've had to invest a lot more in UGC.
I have. Once you marry into it, there's no way out. Anyway, we're going to finish up with our final segment for the day, and that is You Can't Be Serious. Look, we might stick with Louis. What have you got in store for us this morning?
Just a reference to an old Monty Python skit, but down in Warrnambool, where people are also in phase three restrictions, someone's put on their lawn a note saying, "You have now entered the jurisdiction of the Ministry of Silly Walks. Commence silly walking immediately." And now this lady is watching all sorts of people do silly walks right past the front of her house. It's very entertaining.
I love it. I love it. Now, Joel, I'm just watching Joel's You Can't Be Serious, actually, while he's preparing for this. But, Joel, tell me, what on earth is going on there?
Oh, I'm watching a video of Russian doctors pull a 1.2-meter snake from a female patient's mouth that snuck into her mouth when she fell asleep outside in her Russian village in Dagestan. Oh, my God.
Wow.
If you're squeamish, do not watch that.
So she fell asleep, and the snake apparently inserted itself in her throat while she was asleep.
I'm just surprised she didn't.
The snake was. She must have been passed out rather than asleep.
Yeah.
Maybe she was drunk and it was ISO, man. And she's just run out and thought.
Oh my God! And the video is on the internet. I'm just watching it on news.com.au, and it's full on.
It's pretty graphic. Yeah. All right, Brett.
All right, thanks. Well, I'm going to tell you guys about the latest stimulus that I think Trump's about to launch. So he went down, apparently, I missed the news, but there was a hurricane down in Louisiana recently, and he was down there in the last week, just helping some of the support staff. And he signed a few autographs and handed them around saying, "Sell them on eBay tonight for $10,000. So if he just roams the country handing out signatures, that could be the economic stimulus they need.
What more could you need? Well, look, guys, we're going to have to wrap it up there today. Thanks for all your input this morning, and have a fabulous weekend in isolation. I hope you get out and do some more blockies, and we'll be back next week.
Very good
work.
Thank you.
Enjoy. Thanks, everyone.